get it to Boyd. Boyd gets it to Kyer. Kyer with three to Livingston. Long desperation three. It's good!
Hey 10. GiantKiller.co and the By George Podcasting Network present an Atlantic 10 original. The Hey 10 Podcast featuring Petey Buckets and Grant LeBenz.
Tosses it in, and it's over. Davidson is going to the dance. They win the Atlantic 10 Tournament Championship.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hey 10 Podcast, episode 2 of the season. I'm back with Petey. Petey, how's it going?
What's up, Grant? Big week for the A10.
Big week for the A10. We've got a lot to talk about since we did our preseason podcast 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I can't remember exactly all the predictions we made, but I'm sure all of them are wrong at this point. Everything's totally unraveled, especially...
We got everything right.
Goodness. We got everything right. Yeah. So you don't have to go back and listen. And well, you should, but you don't have to. But yeah, it was a big week for the league, as Petey mentioned. You know, it started off kind of a little bit of a rough point with the Davidson loss to Charlotte. St. Bonaventure fell to 0-3 last Tuesday. But then we had this big boost for the conference as a whole in the A-10 SEC Challenge, as I'm kind of referring to it as, where the league took down LSU, Vanderbilt, and Alabama in a three-day stretch. So I think we're going to go kind of one by one and break down what we saw in a few of these contests, because this was a week that really, really moved the needle for the conference.
Yeah, for sure. Where do we want to start? Start with the big dog, VCU-LSU?
Let's start with VCU-LSU. So big night for the Rams from three in particular in the first half is what kind of stood out to me. You know, I know VCU is not really a three-point shooting team, but, you know, they got to 50 points offensively at the break. And I know they hit a couple big shots before that halftime buzzer went off that, you know, kind of extended that lead over LSU. That's really got to be a focal point for VCU going forward. And obviously their defense was great, and we saw that kind of in display today against Jacksonville State. But I thought shooting was really a key for the Rams and really helped them out to get this one.
Yeah, 26 turnovers for LSU. Whew. That's crazy.
Oh my gosh, I missed that one.
Yeah, so LSU, like I didn't watch the game, so I wasn't able to. I was driving from work to Eagle Bank Arena for the Mason game. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to lean on you for exactly what you saw there. But going through the box score is pretty ridiculous. Because as a team, VCU only had 14 steals, 4 from Santos Silva, 3 from Jenkins, 3 from Vince Williams, the new 4 who replaced Sean Mobley, and a couple from Marcus Evans, mm-hmm. and then 1 or 2 from a couple other players. So obviously we know they got that tremendously active pressure defense. What did you see? Did it look legit?
Yeah, it definitely looked legit. And honestly, I think the sixth defender on the floor for VCU has to be its home crowd. You know, that place was obviously rocking. It was packed. I think for LSU, there were some communication issues on a couple passes. You know, I think some of those errors, like you mentioned, were unforced, but certainly forced in a sense that the crowd really made a difference for that game. But yeah, 26 turnovers for LSU, that's incredible. VCU had 16 itself. Turnovers have kind of been an issue for the Rams, at least in their first two games. I think they might have turned the ball over more than North Texas in their second game, you know, one where they almost lost. But, mm-hmm. you know, overall, that's a really big win for the conference. I think LSU... LSU is a physical and big basketball team. They've got Trenton Watford, who was, I don't know if you remember, Christian Watford from Indiana, who hit that big shot over Kentucky a while back, maybe 7 or 8 years ago. It's been a while. But they had some athletic dudes, and I was really impressed just to see VCU command itself on the defensive end of the floor and really make those guys look uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I think that's where a guy like Santos Silva is just so valuable. Oh, yeah. I think if you listen to this podcast, you know I've got a little man crush on Santos Silva, which is like, as a Mason fan, it's tough to say that about any VCU player, but the dude's so good. He's so big and physical and mm-hmm. clearly like belongs in those sort of rugby matches that you have against teams from the SEC.
Exactly.
But yeah, 8 of 13 shooting, 17 points, 11 rebounds, mm-hmm. 4 steals, 2 blocks. Just absolutely filled it up, and I'm guessing looked right at home against probably what was a bigger front court from LSU.
Yeah, and you mentioned his length. I mean, I think the play of the game for Silva was in one of the final possessions. LSU had a chance to tie or take the lead, and all he did was literally just kind of put his hand out, and it was enough to deflect a pass off. You know, VC got the ball back, got to the other end, mm-hmm. shot free throws, and pretty much sealed the game. So I just think, you know, the way he puts his hands out affects every pass, you know, just gets that big body inside. And he's just a force to be reckoned with. So really, yeah. really looking for more improvements from him this year, but he's yeah. been good.
And VCU followed it up with a drubbing today of, I think, Jacksonville State. So no yeah. letdown from them. Not yet. I think it's we're probably still aligned that VCU is the class of the A-10 at this point.
I think you're right about that. Nothing to say otherwise so far. But that was game one of the A-10 SEC Challenge, as we're kind of referring to it. And then, you know, Richmond, the day after, got a home win over Vanderbilt, which definitely not as impressive. I think Vanderbilt might be the team picked to finish last.
Picked last, yep.
Okay. But a win is a win, regardless. Interesting. Now, I didn't watch this one, but I was kind of following along on Twitter, following on the box score. They had Scottie Pippen Jr. on their team, which is interesting. He's a freshman. He only scored 4 points, and I think he was the guy that fouled Andre Gustafson with, you know, 0.6 seconds left on the clock in overtime, and he hit the one free throw to win. But, but yeah, looking at the box score, Aaron Nesmith for Vanderbilt dropped 34 points. They let him shoot 7 of 12 from 3.
Yeah.
Defense kind of an issue for the Spiders in this one.
Yeah, so I did catch this game, and this was this was a fun one. You don't want to read too much into it because, again, Vanderbilt picked last place in the SEC. Richmond, you know, I think they can be a good, fun team. It was a fun game, but, you know, if Richmond's the middle of the pack A-10 team, they should be able to take a last place Power 5 team at home and come out with the win. But yeah, I think, you know, I think that Scottie Pippen Jr., I don't think I realized that he was on the team. But yeah, there he is. Richmond's defense is a mess is really the point that I'm trying to get at in a very roundabout way. Nesmith dropped 34. Some guy off the bench came for Vanderbilt and dropped 24 on him. So, you know, Vanderbilt, they're a bigger team. They have some athleticism. So, you know, I'm not trying to take anything away from Richmond right now. You know, it was a good team win. I think Gilliard went absolutely nuts. I love that guy. I still think he's underrated, even though he's a preseason first teamer. I still think people are like skeptical that he might be, you know, the best player in the A-10 or one of the best players in the A-10. Mm-hmm. But the dude is so good. And then Richmond also, they found a player with Blake Francis there, the transfer from Wagner. He had a pretty good stat line, 24 points, 9 of 17 shooting, hit some threes. You know, I think Richmond probably is just about what we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season. They're going to score points. They're going to put some, they're going to be able to score, but, you know, the defense is going to need some work.
Yeah. I think I saw a stat on Twitter that Richmond has scored 90 points in its first 3 games, for the first time since somebody walked on the moon or something like that. So
really,
it's been a while since the offense, and obviously the extra sessions help, you know, 2 overtime games and 3. Contest will let you run up the scoreboard a little bit, but I mean, absolutely, your point is right. Richmond's offense is there, defensively not. And I think we need to make a distinction too, because this team's really good at forcing turnovers. I mean, Jacob Gilliard had 7 steals that night. Vanderbilt coughed it up 19 times. It's just defensive rebounding tends to be an issue for Richmond, and then, you know, 3-point defense. They let Vanderbilt shoot 15 of 35 from 3. I guess that's not incredible, but also 18 of 31 from 2. That's almost 60%. So you got to be better defensively. And it might just be, honestly, that, you know, you've got 5 guys that are on the floor almost the entire game, you know, that starting roster 5. And I don't know if they just get worn out and you don't have, because, you know, Richmond's effectively going 3 men deep into their bench.
bench scoring. I mean, the bench scoring is just non-existent. Gustafson, who hit the final three free throw to win the game, had 3 points, and that was all of their bench scoring. So 93 Gosh. Points, 90 points from the starting five.
That is wild.
And only six of them from Grant Golden. Grant Golden was not in foul trouble. He was just totally ineffective. He's a big dude who wasn't very – he just wasn't really working against Vandy's much more much bigger, more athletic bigs. So Richmond decided to go small, and they paid for it a little bit on the defensive end, mm-hmm. but the way that they were able to fill it up more than made up for it. And, you know, I think that guys we haven't mentioned, Nathan Kayo, Nick Sherrod, also had very, very good games and are going to be good pieces. And I think that's the book on Richmond is their starting five is going to be pretty solid. They've got, like, nothing on the bench.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Well, Richmond is 3-0, and looking forward to seeing them a little bit in the future. They've got a game against Wisconsin coming up, and that'll be their first kind of true test. So we'll have to see how that one goes. The final game that we get to talk about from this A-10 SEC Challenge was Rhode Island playing Alabama, and I know this is a game mm-hmm. we both watched. What stood out to you in the Rams' 14-point win at home over the Crimson Tide?
What stood out to me was I felt like Rhode Island, they looked like a very mature and kind of disciplined team. Mm-hmm. Alabama was running at just an outrageously fast pace, and I don't know if this sort of jumped off to you, but like for me, it reminded me of watching the old Steve Nash Suns, the 7 seconds or left stuff. Like yeah. every time, even on made baskets or rebounds or whatever, the ball is just flying down the floor, mm-hmm. and the first guy who gets any sort of look is putting it up. But I didn't feel like Rhode Island got sped up at all. You know, they certainly took some shots early in the shot clock, but it felt like those were good shots that presented themselves, and they're sort of playing within the flow of the game. I thought they looked pretty mature, pretty disciplined, and obviously, you know, they were at home. They had that Ryan Center crowd behind them, big, you know, emotional. Felt kind of emotional game, and they got out to like a 20-point lead in the first half, and then just sort of cruised in the second half. But yeah, I think the other thing that jumps out is that Rhode Island looks absolutely right at home physically when they're playing these big, bigger teams. You know, Langevin and Harris as a front court is just huge, and the guys that they bring off the bench. You know, they got Obi Toppin's little brother Jacob, Dana Tate, I think, also a bigger dude. So I think that they, Rhode Island's going to, you know, they've got the size to compete with teams mm-hmm. like that, and that's going to be, you know, it's going to make them a really interesting matchup once we get into A-10 play here.
Yeah. I'll tell you what stood out for me. I think there's two things. One, Rhode Island was able to score 93 points in regulation while only hitting 6 3-pointers. That's huge, considering Rhode Island is really not a three-point shooting team. I know we've talked about this a lot. 3 of their 6 3-pointers came from Jacob Toppin, so awesome to see the freshman getting involved. Obviously, Jeff Doughton and Fats Russell probably not shooting as well as they did a little bit earlier in their careers, but if they're getting, you know, inside the lane and scoring at the hoop, that's kind of where I think those two are maximizing their value for this team on offense. So really promising to see Rhode Island not have to take and make a lot of threes to beat a pretty good SEC team by 14 at home. Mm-hmm. And the other big thing that stood out for me was Cyril Langevin, 10 of 12 from the free throw line. That's pretty big.
That's scary.
Yeah, I mean, for a big that gets fouled a ton, it really goes off to after the offensive glass, gets to the free throw line. If he could be consistently making his free throws at like a 70, you know, even 65, or it's probably got to be higher than that, 70 to 80% clip, you know, that's going to do it for the Rams, and that's going to help them run up the scoreboard real quickly. You know, as a team, they were above 80%, 21 of 26. So, again, mm-hmm. I think it helps. You're at home. You got the home crowd. You're hitting your free throws, but I'm sure the big man's been working on it because his stroke looks nice from the free throw stripe.
Yeah. Yeah, and one other thing I want to say about Rhode Island is I thought Fats looked really good, and I know you know, I've been critical of Fats on here, and I do wish, you know, he takes a lot of these shots that you really wish Jeff Doughton got some more of that shot volume, because Doughton is just elite and probably has the skill set to be better, a little bit better at taking those contested shots mm-hmm. That Fats takes a lot of. But one thing that jumps off about Fats is that he wasn't really hiding on defense against Alabama. You know, he's really good at staying in front of his man. You're going to have to shoot over him. What's that guy's name? Beetle Bolden from Alabama. Fats was matched up on Beetle Bolden most of the game. 0 for 4 from 3 for Beetle Bolden. Nice. So it wasn't exactly you know, wasn't really taking advantage of the smaller defender. And then Fats also has four steals. So
yeah,
he stays in front of his man. He can jump passing lanes. You know, I think any Fats is like, I don't know what he's listed at, but in reality, he's like 5'6" or 5'7" or something incredibly short like that. And he's not going to be able to do it every game, but I think he's sort of learning how to be, you know, he's learning how to defend in a way where you don't really have to like scheme to hide him.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree. Really impressed with Rhode Island. Looking forward to a couple of their games coming up, which we'll talk about later in this podcast. But LSU on Sunday is a big one, and that's one of, I think, three matchups this next 7 days for the Rams. So we're really going to learn about a lot about this team in the next couple of days, but things looking up for the A-10 and Rhodey Rams right now. Let's go ahead and move on into a new section where we're going to talk about a few of these teams that maybe we haven't seen enough of yet, but have pleasantly surprised in the sense that they are all undefeated except for St. Joseph's, but we're going to throw them in there too. So we're going to do a little buy or sell on Duquesne, Mason, UMass, and the Hawks. Let's dig right in. Let's start with Duquesne. Duquesne is undefeated so far. They are 3-0, and they're coming off a 36 win over Lipscomb. And before we get into buy or sell, I want to kind of say something cool. I tweeted at KenPom from the A10 Talk account, and I said, hey, KenPom, like, have you ever seen a worse combined three-point shooting performance from two teams? Because at the point, I think they were 0 for 32 or something like that from three. And the game ended, Lipscomb was 0 of 18, and Duquesne was 1 of 22. So I think they were a combined 1 of 40 from three. And I don't have the tweet pulled up. I should have done that. But KenPom said something like the previous record for two teams to only make 0 or 1 three-pointers on total number of attempts was like 1 for 31 or something like that. So this game just blew that out of the water.
They accomplished something for sure.
They did. But hey, they got a 22-point win at home. And I guess that defense is looking pretty good. But what do you think about the Dukes? Buy or sell?
Oh, my God. I'm just looking this. Sorry. Before we get to buy or sell, you know how KenPom does the Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4 breakdowns by game? Lipscomb went 8 points, 10 points, 9 points, 9 points.
That is crazy.
It's the most pathetic looking line I've ever seen.
Yeah.
KenPom. But yeah, anyway, you know, Duquesne, I think I'm not ready to buy him yet.
Okay.
One thing, so a couple of reasons. First, we still don't know if they're a good shooting team or not.
Yeah.
Because you just talked about the 1 for 22 performance. They were 13 of 25 in the first game of the season, and then they were like 8 of 27 in the second game of the season. So we've seen them at like extra large, medium, and extra small in terms of their ability to shoot threes. So I don't know if they can shoot yet, and I don't know how they're going to be a good team if they're not able to hit threes. One other point I want to make real quick is that Bailey Steele, I think he's a grad transfer, has looked really good for him. But I don't think you can really play Michael Hughes and Bailey Steele at the same time, which is going to be tough because, you know, we've both talked about how much we love Michael Hughes. I think he was A-10 all underrated last season. but they're both like very big traditional fives. I don't really see him like moving that well enough to chase guys out to the perimeter. So I think that's kind of like throwing a little bit of cold water on Bailey Steele, who's looked really good. I just don't know if he can be part of their best lineup. Mm-hmm.
Interesting note on that. And tying in with Duquesne's three-point shooting at this point, Bailey Steele has taken the second most three-point attempts on the team, only to TDM, and he's 4 of 16 from deep. And I know he had a couple in that first game that I watched against Princeton. He might have even had three in the first half. So that means he's shooting about 1 of 13 cents or something like that. So
yeah.
He probably doesn't need to be shooting a bunch of threes. I know his stroke looks all right, but Sincere Carey, 6 of 11 on the year from deep. He's shooting 54%. That's pretty good. I'd like to see him and Maceo Austin, their freshman, get a few more looks. They've been playing pretty well so far. But
so I didn't ask you. Are you buying or selling?
I guess at this point I am. I'm going to buy the Dukes. I'm going to buy the Dukes because
you're gonna buy them. All
right. And I'm also going to buy them because of the non-conference schedule they have coming up. It's really not that difficult. They have a few games that are going to be a bit tougher than the ones they've played so far. Indiana State, I know they took Dayton kind of down to the wire. And I'm looking on KenPom. I don't know the whole backstory with Duquesne's non-conference schedule, but they've got a bunch of random neutral site games.
Yeah, because, sorry, their arena is undergoing renovation or something.
I know they've been playing at, like, you know, Maryland Eastern Shore and God knows wherever, but I don't know why we're playing like Austin Peay in St. Petersburg, Florida.
I guess I don't know the answer to that either. Even when you watch the games that they've played recently, it's like I guess it's like this D3 school that's around Pittsburgh where they're playing their games. So it's a very, very small gym, doesn't really look D1. But yeah, it's part of the viewing experience.
Of course. But I will buy the Dukes for defensive reasons right now. I think they've looked good on that end of the floor. I didn't really watch the Lipscomb game, so I couldn't tell you if Lipscomb was just terrible or if Duquesne's 3-point defense was that good, but I'm going to guess it was a
Lipscomb
bit of both.
Lipscomb was terrible.
Yeah.
They were both terrible.
But anyway, so that's Duquesne. I think we both, the consensus agreement is we need to see a little bit more, and that's kind of what it's going to be like for all these teams. But let's talk your boys, George Mason Patriots. They're 4-0 on the year, and I know you've been probably at most, if not all, of these home games. So
your undefeated George Mason Patriots.
The undefeated George Mason Patriots, 4-0. Tell me how you feel about how these first couple games against, you know, some of these non-conference opponents have gone, and are you buying or selling George Mason?
Yeah, I think there are arguments in both directions. We don't have our best player yet. Justin Kyer's still been sidelined for, you know, I think we're hoping to have him back by A-10 play, probably actually a little bit sooner than that. So, you know, I think when Kyer comes back, I think we'll be better. One of the things I love about Mason right now is how the ball's just moving a lot better, because I think with Otis and Kyer there last season, there was sort of like, you know, the younger players were much more deferential than they needed to be. And now there's no real alpha dog at the moment. So the ball moves pretty well. And we got a lot of guys who are like grooving and finding their roles at this point. It's really fun to watch. Now, the big caveat is that the quality of competition has been pretty terrible. So I think for that reason, I can't in good conscience, like, come on here and tell you guys to buy George Mason right now. Because it's like Navy took us to overtime in the first game at home. We've had four games so far. All of them probably been a little bit closer down the stretch than they should have been, all at home to teams that are 233-plus in KenPom. So I think I would probably sell right now. As a Mason fan, I'm pretty happy with what I'm seeing. You know, I think it's going to be a fun season. I'm just trying to keep my expectations reasonable. And I think, you know, if I'm going to do that, you know, as a Mason fan, I'm all in. As a trying to, you know, put my analyst hat on, I would say let's sell at the moment.
Very fair. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm selling for the same reasons, especially that Navy game is probably the most George Mason basketball I've watched this season. Just, you know, no offense to your guys, but, you know, there's been better games going on at any given time. So I haven't been checking out George Mason at LIU as much as I would have hoped. But, yeah, it was a bit concerning, you know, seeing that Navy was the worst team that, you know, the Patriots have played so far, and they were the ones that caused the most trouble. And obviously you have to look at all of this through the lens of George Mason is missing Justin Kyer, and Justin Kyer is likely George Mason's best player this year. But you did point out some positives. I really like the way Jordan Miller's been playing. He's shooting 60% from 2-point range. That's really good for, you know, a guy his size. He's not like a traditional center who's just playing above the rim. AJ Wilson's been great defensively. I think he's fifth in the nation right now in block percentage. So he's been a big surprise, especially after, you know, I know you Mason guys always mention how the Jared Reuter experiment kind of failed last year, and you've been looking for a big that's been reliable, and he's certainly been that way on the defensive end of the floor. But yeah, it does feel like with Mason, this has been one of those seasons where it feels like one of these home games just isn't going to go your way, and then it's all going to collapse, and it hasn't yet. Oh, and I don't want to say that, you know, about your team, but
no, dude, I tweeted the exact same thing. We were like tied at halftime against James Madison.
Yeah.
We ended up pulling away late, but I tweeted, I think something like, you know, the rules are play with fire, you get burned. Like, yeah. we're going to drop one of these woofers at one point.
That's kind of like where I'm at. And thank God you guys haven't. I mean, I hope you get past Loyola MD on Tuesday, and then you're 5-0 going into Maryland. But
I love how hilariously misleading non-conference basketball can be, right now the big thing in the world of Mason is that we have never started a season 5-0.
Really?
We've had some like really good basketball teams come through Mason, and none of them has ever started 5-0, which just seems outrageous that like this team only needs to beat Loyola Maryland
just to get 5-0. Right?
Yeah.
No, that is true. I mean, you really can't look into a lot of these games, and I keep putting out like A-10 power rankings and stuff, and people get all frustrated, whether it's Mason fans or Massachusetts fans or St. Joseph's fans, when I still have them in like the 8, 9, 10 range. It's like, guys, just because you beat Longwood doesn't mean you're better than Davidson this year.
And it's so hard to like take what you're seeing against really low level competition and try and translate it, and you know, wonder how is this going to work against like the Davidsons, and the St. Louis's of the world, you know, because Mason runs this like 1-2-2 zone pressure right now. It's like a full court press, which is, you know, pretty cool. We've wanted to do this for a while, but Dave Paulson has just never had the athletes to do it, and he's got some athletes now, so he's trying to do it. It needs a lot of work. You know, it looks good, and it causes some turnovers and gets some of these like lesser teams with lesser guards to go deeper into the shot clock. I'm, you know, skeptical that it's really going to work in A-10 play without a lot of improvements.
Makes sense. Let's move on to the third team in the buy-sell conversation, and I mentioned them as we were just talking here. Massachusetts has been surprisingly really, really good this year. I know they struggled a bit at the start with UMass Lowell, but pulled away late. Fairfield was a close game, but their last two competitions have looked really nice, beating Northeastern and then absolutely crushing Central Connecticut this past weekend. So how do we feel about the Minutemen? Are we buying or selling at this point, BD?
Yeah, maybe we should have like defined what buy or sell means. I think
it's pretty obvious. I think it's like, if you're...
Is it like, do you think they're going to finish like better than expectation?
I think like it's like, is their stock going up or down based on...
Stock going up.
As in like, all right, Massachusetts stock right now is probably rising. It's probably decent high. Yeah. Do you think that continues to go up? Like, do they beat Rider, or do things just start to unravel when we play Virginia, Rutgers, South Carolina, Harvard, Yale?
Yeah, they do have sort of a murderer's row schedule coming up. I'll buy UMass for now. I think I've seen a little bit of them. I think they've got some legit talent. You know, I think I'd be really surprised if they wind up in the bottom four where everybody has them projected. So I think I'm buying them in that regard. Mason and UMass are both in the same boat where, like, we've got one more tune-up game. Like, Mason has Loyola, Massachusetts has Rider. Mm-hmm. Although I guess Rider's
going to be a tough one.
Projected to be pretty close for UMass. But yeah, then we're both going to get absolutely pounded in the next game where Mason goes to Maryland and Massachusetts plays UVA on a neutral site. So we've got a couple drubbings coming up in the future there. But yeah, UMass is like, you know, who are their friends? They got like Trey Mitchell, I think. TJ Weeks. Like Trey Mitchell looks legit, man.
Yeah.
He was the A-10's best recruit. Mm-hmm. Coming into this season, I think. Is that right? Do you know?
He or Bones Highland. I don't know exactly where the rankings ended up, but they were both kind of on their own level.
Yeah, that's right. No, man, Trey Mitchell is like a 6'9 freshman. He's not only – he's top 100 on – I'm looking at Ken Palm right now. Top 100 in defensive rebounding rate. He's also like – when you watch him, he's just smooth.
Yeah.
Man. Like freshmen that are that big that have those kind of moves are, you know, they're very rare, and it's pretty obvious to see why he was rated so highly. And he's, you know, he's got a lot of little yellow highlights when you look at his Ken Palm. Mm-hmm. So pretty well-rounded game, you know, block shots, rebounds, you know, he's pretty good. And then they've got a point guard too, Sean East.
Yeah, he's been good.
Has looked really, really good. Top 25 assist rate on Ken Palm, super efficient scoring, efficient stat lines. So I think that, you know, the reason the UMass guys were really high was because they had this highly rated recruiting class and they had all these sophomores. or rising sophomores, and it's like everybody else in the world is skeptical of that stuff. But, you know, I think against lesser competition, you can kind of see what everybody's getting excited about.
Yeah. I think I'll hold Massachusetts for now. I kind of like where their expectations are. They're rising a bit. You know, they're by no means at this point expected to be a top five team in the league, but I could see them reasonably finishing eighth, ninth, maybe seventh at best. And I don't think we've seen Cy Chapman play yet this year. I might be mistaken in that, but I've heard a lot of UMass fans talk about how he should be much improved as a sophomore, and I think he's been out for personal reasons, so I'm not exactly sure what that's looking like. But I think you hit it on the nose with the freshman, especially Sean East. I think he's been the biggest surprise. I think we knew Trey Mitchell was going to be really good. Like you said, he's been scoring at a high rate. He can shoot the three, and he just kind of plays like he's a senior, not a freshman. But Sean East has been that great distributor and point guard for the team that I actually think makes everybody better. You know, UMass fans talked a lot about addition by subtraction. I think last year you have a team with a point guard in Lawan Pipkins who you're just kind of relying on to score 30, 40 points a game. You're giving him the ball every possession and just saying go to work. And now I think Sean East is a point guard that you know, really sets up the team well and gets other guys good looks, you know, hence his top 25 assist rate in the country. He's doing a great job. Plus, he got on ESPN for making a full court shot. So any press is good press for the Atlantic 10 Conference. But yeah, I agree with you. I think Massachusetts is doing well. I'm kind of holding them where they're at. I'm cautiously optimistic, but, you know, definitely does not hurt that a team that was, you know, the lowest ranked in the conference in KenPom has made a 58 spot jump already and has been exceeding expectations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely, you know, buying in the sense that they're going to be fun.
Yeah.
Last year's UMass team was just kind of sad.
It was. It was.
And I think that this one, they're gonna be a lot of fun to watch. You know, we haven't seen McCall with like a healthy roster.
Sure.
Or really a roster that's not at a tremendous talent deficit yet. And these guys got some talent. So.
Agreed. You know,
keep an eye on them.
Let's move on to the last team we threw in the mix. Not undefeated, but certainly been interesting so far, St. Joseph's, and a win we didn't mention in kind of that good recap summary of the week was the Hawks taking down Connecticut on the road, probably the biggest surprise of the year, actually, for A-10 games so far. You know, and then they turn around, lose to a Loyola Chicago team on the road that's not bad, but, you know, defense kind of shut down in the second half. How do we feel about the Hawks so far, buying or selling?
I think I'm still going to, I think I'm still going to sell the Hawks. I don't know. I need more time to think. So they've got, like, Connecticut just beat Florida, like, as of a couple hours ago. So at first I thought, you know, maybe Connecticut's just trash. Like, we shouldn't read too much into that. Because, you know, St. Joe's, they lost to Old Dominion, who's not great. They lost to Loyola, who's not great, you know. The Connecticut win looked pretty good, but then also Connecticut shot like 8 of 34 from two. I think if you look at the game score thingy on KenPom, 8 of 34 from two, which is just like almost impossibly hard to do. So it seemed like it was kind of a bad game from UConn, but I think moreover they launch a shitload of three pointers. Currently fourth in the country in 3-point attempt rate at almost 53%.
Wow.
So this team is just bombs away, and that means some nights on the right nights they're gonna look really good, and you're gonna walk away thinking like, wow, St. Joe's is really impressive. Mm-hmm. But then they're also gonna look like garbage half the time. So I think that's kind of – I think I'm selling for that reason.
I think I'm in the same boat. I think I'm selling mainly defensively. They've been pretty terrible. I watched a little bit of the Loyola-Chicago game, and I didn't see them in the first half. I unfortunately saw the unraveling in the second half. But, you know, the Ramblers were just kind of getting whatever they wanted, and I think part of that is just because this roster doesn't run that many deep. A lot of these guys, especially the freshmen like Ramir Moore, Cameron Brown, have been doing a good job and actually playing a lot better than I expected. But, you know, it's just the nature of a team that has a lot of newcomers, hasn't played a lot of games together. St. Joseph's just really isn't that good of a team defensively, and that's really going to come back and bite them. They're giving up almost 44% on threes this year. That's 342nd in the country. But like you mentioned, I think it's just kind of hit or miss. If their threes are falling, like they're launching them all game, they're going to look good and they're going to play well. But if they're not, their defense isn't getting the job done. But definitely one of the toughest schedules so far. You know, they've played three KenPom BA teams, which is, I guess, the tiers that he uses to rank, in Connecticut, Loyola, mm-hmm. Chicago, and Old Dominion. And then you got Villanova, Temple, Florida, some other good teams coming up. So you know, we're going to get to see a lot of the Hawks. I think I'm selling in the sense that their expectations have kind of gone up a lot after they beat Connecticut, but I still think they're going to be in the 9, 10, 11 range come conference play.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. And then, the point about like newcomers and everything like that stuff, that's just so hard to overcome, especially when you get deep into the season and you're playing against teams that have been together for a few years and you guys like are still kind of getting acclimated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like it's just going to be difficult. And I know St. Joe's, they're missing Anthony Longpre. Hasn't played. But they're still, you know, they're still figuring out lineups. They're still figuring out rotations. It looks like Sharif Knox and Ramir Moore are the guys who are getting minutes for him off the bench. Sharif Knox is a freshman. I forget about Ramir Moore. I think he might be a little it's just like it's tough to rely on those guys and make any sort of like real noise in conference.
Sure.
And yeah, they got outscored 43-23 in the second half of that Loyola Chicago game.
Yeah, so that's not great, but I agree the Florida game will be fun.
I think the Florida game will let us know like how seriously we should take them.
Yeah.
If they give them a game for a while, and I'm not as worried about the final margin, but if they give it a game for a while, you know, if they keep it close after like 20, 30 minutes, you know, then maybe we start looking at St. Joe's a little differently.
Sure. And
kind of expecting them to just get drubbed from the get-go. But, you know, we'll see.
But the expectations are never right in this conference, so we will see.
Right, exactly.
I think that's a good point, and I think we should move on to, speaking of the St. Joseph Florida game, some of the top games we've got upcoming this week, because there are quite a few to watch. I know it's not feast week yet. I think college basketball started a bit earlier this year, but we're getting into kind of some of those preseason tournaments where, you know, mm-hmm. teams are inexplicably playing each other in like the Virgin Islands, but I'm here for it. I love watching college basketball this time of year. Let's first talk. We've got two Atlantic 10 teams playing Nevada this week. That's Davidson plays them at home on Tuesday. And then the Fordham Rams, I think I nailed it with the Virgin Islands. I think they're playing in the Virgin Islands on Friday.
Yeah. Why didn't we include Fordham in the buy or sell?
I guess that's a good point.
I'm
we should have.
Let's not do this again. Fordham schedule is the worst of the worst, and everybody's like, "Oh, Fordham, I don't know."
Yeah,
they're 5-0.
Yeah. So. Well, this will be their toughest test yet with Nevada, but the Wolfpack definitely not the team they were last year. Lost like 7 seniors or something like that. 2-2 this year with a loss at home to USC. Also a loss at home to Utah. So I think the Wolfpack should have their hands full at Davidson, especially if the Wildcats are playing like they did this past weekend against UNC Wilmington. And obviously, I don't think Fordham is going to beat Nevada.
Right. Yeah. Who else we got? If I had a tab open and I was supposed to talk about this, I closed it.
we've got a few long shot games, which we wanted to mention, and I'll let you take this one away. Okay. George Mason at Maryland. We saw Rhode Island go play the Terps on the road and really kept up in the first 10 minutes, and then it was kind of all Maryland. Do you expect mm-hmm. anything different from George Mason?
The only thing I expect different is that I don't think this game's ever going to be when Mason plays him. I watched the Rhode Island Maryland game, and you know, it wasn't that hot start that Rhode Island had was much more about Maryland looking awful mm-hmm. than it was about Rhodey doing anything. And I was like, I was tweeting as much at the time, but like Maryland had a few of those turnovers where like guys are just like standing out of bounds when they catch passes and just like some of that like absolutely brain dead stuff that has to drive coaches crazy. And then once they snapped out of it, it turned into a rout. Mm-hmm. So it's a Friday night game at Maryland. I think the only hope we have as Mason fans is that it's like a letdown game for Maryland and they're looking ahead to something. Otherwise, like, we're not supposed to have Justin Kyrie back for it. Mm-hmm. You know, Ken Pom has it at like 17 points, 6% chance to win for Mason. You know, I'm not too hopeful.
Yeah, I think that's true. The one thing I would say,
I hope we give him a game.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I would say to George Mason's defense is that Maryland's currently shooting 26.4% from three, which is pretty bad, and the Patriots are holding him to just 25%. So that is the one area where I think George Mason could be all right. Maryland heavily relying on the two. What's that?
They're gonna get too much in the paint though.
That's the thing. They're too big. Yeah.
Mason has kind of a smaller front line, and against these smaller teams that they're playing out of conference, the numbers look pretty good, but they're gonna be tested like they haven't been tested before.
Yeah, and Maryland likes to play that 1-3-1 defense a bit too. I mean, we saw how their length affected Rhode Island in the second part of that first half. You know, I know not having Justin Kyrie obviously hurts, but you'll need Javon Green, Jamal Hartwell, those guys to be, you know, sharp with the ball, making crisp passes. Can't be lazy and can't be turning it over because Maryland's going to make you pay.
Yep.
Also this week, another long shot game we got is Massachusetts playing against Virginia. And that, I think, oh gosh, I got to look where that's being played. Is it Brooklyn? No, it's at Mohegan Sun.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, so that'll be a decent game, and hopefully Massachusetts can get, you know, a decent showing from its crowd out there, although I'm sure Virginia fans are going to travel pretty well. Virginia's doing Virginia things this year. They're third in KenPom, despite, I think, being like 11th or 12th in the nation. So, you know, they could be pretty underrated. And nobody has scored more than 42 points on them this year in three contests. So if Massachusetts could break the 45-point mark, they're doing better than Columbia, Syracuse, or James Madison. But
Massachusetts is going to – I have this feeling they're going to put up – they're going to lose by 30, but they're going to put up 50 points, and UMass Twitter is going to go nuts.
Yeah. That'd be fun to see. I mean, KenPom's predicting a 68-49 win for Virginia. So if that's the case, they're doing better than half the – they're doing better than the Orange. But yeah, that's going to be a tough one. And I think that's a two-game series, so they might get – I think it's either St. John's or Arizona State. I need to confirm that. But either way, that's going to be two good games for the Minutemen. And, you know, probably not going to get a win over Virginia, but maybe you come back and beat a Power 5 team that's not as highly touted. So.
Oh, and I remembered one more I was supposed to mention. St. Louis gets Belmont at home on Saturday.
Yeah.
That should be a good one.
I think that's kind of in our last section, which would be more like the top games of the week.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I agree with you. That's going to be a good game. I think Belmont just beat Boston College. Yeah, Boston College on the road, 100-85. So their scoring certainly hasn't subsided since Dylan Windler left last year. That is going to be a good game. Obviously, we saw, I don't know if you watched St. Louis today against Seton Hall, but
I did. Yep.
That was a tough one. You know, the Pirates clearly just the better team, and Miles Powell's a guy that's pretty hard to stop. But also some promising points for the Billikens. You know, they put up 66, which I would argue last year's offense would maybe put up 50 against a team like Seton Hall. And, you know, some of those newcomers looked pretty good. You got, I was impressed with Javonte Perkins in the first half. He was getting the rim and actually scoring at the hoop. You know, Jimmy Bell, Yuri Collins, some of these freshmen look pretty good too. So that's going to be a good test. And if St. Louis gets that one, you know, their non-conference isn't completely terrible. So that wouldn't be a bad one.
St. Louis, yeah, it's so impressive to me year over year how big St. Louis is. Mm-hmm. Seton Hall is legitimately one of the biggest teams in the country.
Yeah.
And they were not that much bigger than St. Louis. You know, obviously Hassan French in the middle is a monster. But yeah, those guys, Javonte Perkins has really good size. Jimmy Bell, their freshman, has really good size. So yeah, they'll be big again.
It's kind of funny is actually you say that their average height is 75.8, and that's 313th in the nation. So I think they're big
That's so misleading though, because every single player on St. Louis is like built like a linebacker.
Yeah.
Well, like Hassan French is 6'7", so he's not. Like any of those height-based metrics just don't do it justice at all.
Right, and you got guys like Tay Weaver and Yuri Collins that are 6 foot and 5 foot 10 respectively. So that's obviously.
I would rather fight any 7 footer in the NCAA than I would rather fight Hassan French. Like, absolutely not. Never. No, thank you.
I agree. He had some tough calls on him today too. I don't know if you watched.
That second foul call was awful.
Yeah, the one where he got like a trash. Bump on the offensive rebound or something like that, but.
That was terrible.
But to your point, I mean, there was a moment in the early in the second half where Seton Hall had kind of clearly started to run away with the game, but I think French just was determined to really just take it himself and got the defensive rebound and just like waved off Yuri Collins and just took the ball up as the point, drove into the lane and got a bucket. And I was like, all right, there you go, Hassan French. But clearly a little frustrated, but I would agree with you. He is one of the most physically imposing guys in the league. And, you know, the Billikens are not going to see a team as big as Seton Hall probably for the rest of the year. So
probably, yeah, for sure.
That Belmont game will be good. And the other one that we wanted to mention was Rhode Island LSU. And I think that is, I'm so bad. I should have researched it. I think that's in Jamaica. It's somewhere, you know.
Our listeners are waiting to make their travel plans.
I know, right? It's
Grant, where is the game? Tell us already.
It's somewhere nicer than wherever I'm going to be this weekend. But that's on Sunday. So, you know, they'll be facing off against LSU. We already talked a lot about LSU. But I think before that, something worth mentioning is Nicholls State could be a tough matchup at home. I know they're 246th in KenPom, but they've already upset Pittsburgh. They took Illinois to overtime and only lost by 10 at LSU. So I think that's a game Rhode Island needs to not overlook.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. That's a good call out. Cool. Anything else we were covering this week?
I don't think so. I think that about does it. It was obviously a pretty up and down week for the league. Some more ups than downs. I know. I don't know if you've been noticing all the guys that called the league trash last year are now, you know, going out on Twitter and basically accepting all the love from the A-10's great tweets. So I saw Jeff Goodman tweeted something. I was not a fan of Jeff Goodman last year because I remember after St. Louis lost to Pittsburgh in New York on a neutral site game, after they had beaten Seton Hall, you know, Goodman was like, and somewhat rightfully so, he was like, the A-10 is trash this year. They better take away their conference bid. You know, they don't even deserve that. And I was kind of like, well, it's a little bit early for that. But, you know, I don't necessarily disagree, but you can't be calling out, you know, all these teams 4 or 5 games in the season and saying the league's just not even going to get a single team in the NCAA tournament. But
he was a little needlessly antagonistic, as I recall.
Well, that's kind of how those college basketball analysts make their living. They just say absurd things and then, you know, people fight them and then everybody's all over their Twitter accounts. So.
It's all right. The A-10's back, baby.
The A-10 is back. I'm excited, and I'm ready to watch some more hoops this week. Are you going to any games this week, or are you just planning on watching
maybe
from the couch?
So Baby Buckets is due within 2 weeks
at
this point. So getting out of the house is an uphill battle.
Yeah, I hear you.
So we'll have to see if I get some free time at all.
What comes first, Baby Buckets or the first George Mason loss?
Ooh, that's a good question.
And more importantly, what are you going to do if Baby Buckets comes on game day? That's going to be tough. Are you going to have to be streaming in the room?
I don't love George Mason basketball that much.
That's fair. That's a good answer.
I clearly am a big nerd about, you know, mid-major basketball to the degree that most people find weird. But
that's probably true. Know, either
I'm,
you're
I, at the same time, I still feel like I'm well-adjusted enough to be present for the birth of my child.
Either that's a good answer or your wife's in the room and you're lying right now. So I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I'm being held at knife point. I would say the first Mason loss because I think we got 5 days till the Maryland game.
Oh, yeah. So Baby Buckets isn't coming that soon. Damn.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, you never know. Maybe it's a miracle and the Terps pull it off. And then you got to name Baby Buckets after one of the guys on the team.
We might have a nice little winning streak after Baby Buckets.
Yeah.
ODU, Jacksonville State, American, UMBC.
We could be looking at a good like 8-1, something like that. That wouldn't be bad.
Something like that. We'll see. All right. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
And so can I ask for Baby Buckets, do you guys know the gender? Are you
okay. Little girl.
Little girl. Okay. So I was going to say you're not naming. If it was going to be a boy, I was going to ask if you're going to name your son after anybody on the team. But again, Will you're not Thomas that. Bucket. Xavier Johnson buckets. no. Well, congratulations. That's exciting.
Thanks, man.
I hope it all goes well. And, you know, next time we chat, you might be a dad. So that's going to be fun. Yep.
This podcast is going to get even more mid-major because you're going to hear a kid screaming in the background. And I'm going to have to, like, just, you know, tell you to talk to yourself for a minute while I go tend to it.
Brian's going to get his work cut out for him editing in the background. Exactly. And all these listeners are going to get what they paid for, which is absolutely zero. Well, awesome. Well, thanks, Petey, again for coming on. This is always a lot of fun. It's a bright point in my week to talk some hoops. Let's go Mason. Let's go Davidson. Let's go A-10. Keep up the winning streak. Any parting thoughts?
No, just a fun season, man. You know, lots of open questions open on some of these teams, especially at the top with Rhode Island and Davidson and Dayton. Dayton's only played two games, which is why we haven't even talked about them.
Yeah.
But no, I think, you know, there's a lot of optimism about the A-10 coming into this season, and I think it's been largely warranted so far. So it should be really fun to keep following along.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, thanks again. Ton of fun.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Take it easy. Listeners, hopefully we will be back in a couple weeks with another one.
We will. We'll see you.
All right. Take it easy. Well, it's too late to